Hello there. Welcome back to the Bernie Miklas Show on this Monday in St. Louis. Hope you're doing good. And got a busy week with Thanksgiving. Hope all the plans are being made and you're looking forward to it. And you're getting some time off, hopefully. I want to revisit the Jim Montgomery hiring by the Blues because I have a theory. And maybe you could even call it a conspiracy theory. So let me explain. And make sure you stick around in the end. Because as I go through what my quote conspiracy theory is, you may wonder like, well, are you turning into one of these paranoid people or whatever? No. I kind of know how these things can work in the NHL because I was involved in a pretty famous story, at least with the St. Louis Blues. And I'm going to share that towards the end. And I'm not doing that just to keep you on because you can fast forward to the end anyway, see? So maybe you can do that too. I don't care. It's up to you, man. Thanks for being here. All right, here's the question. We know that Jim Montgomery is the new Blues coach. He gave his address to the media this morning and, you know, looking forward to watching what he's going to do. He's obviously very excited, tears of joy and all that stuff. His family's delighted. So it's a good situation for our guy, Jim Montgomery, and his family. And welcome home to St. Louis. But let's revisit something, because I think this is all very interesting. Did Doug Armstrong really have a coaching search back when after the Blues season? And, you know, Drew Bannister did a good job of improving the team after Craig Berube was dismissed in December. But did Doug Armstrong really have the traditional type coaching search? Oh, I'm sure he made some calls. He made some inquiries. Sure. But did he have a strong hunch that Jim Montgomery would be available at the latest, maybe one more season? He stays in Boston one more year, his contract's up, and then he's free to join the Blues. Montgomery and Army are very, very tight. They have an incredible relationship. And actually, Montgomery's relationship with everyone in the Blues organization is strong. And his relationship with the people of St. Louis, the hockey community, is strong. He and his wife kept his house, their home here. This is where he wants to be. So did Doug Armstrong just have a feeling of, and he's not going to talk about it. Why would he? This is why I'm left to my own devices here. So bear with me. Doug Armstrong thinking he knew there was some unrest in Boston. He had to know because the way the NHL works, man, every general manager and every agent knows everything that's going on with every team. There ain't no secrets. So did he say to himself, Doug Armstrong say, well, Monty's the guy we wanted and we would have signed Montgomery immediately if the Bruins had chose to not go forward with him after last season. But as it turns out, Doug Armstrong probably heard through the grapevine, Jim Montgomery and the Bruins could not agree on a contract extension. In fact, they didn't even get close. It broke down and there was nowhere to go from that. So Jimmy Montgomery started off the season with the Bruins kind of on a little bit of a cracked ice, right? Cracked. The ice was cracked because I'm sure Don Sweeney, their general manager, wasn't all too pleased when he brought up the idea of a contract extension and Montgomery, you know, either wanted it done on his terms or he wasn't all that interested. And from the Bruins standpoint, you know, Sweeney wanted it to be done on the team's terms or no. And I have a good source in Boston that explained basically it came down to this. Montgomery wanted 5 years. And Sweeney and the Bruins said, no, we're not going to give you five, but we'll give you three. And Montgomery basically, no, I really want five. Now, why would he want 5 years? Okay. He would want 5 years because of the way he's basically been treated up in Boston from the standpoint that his first year, they set an NHL record, 65 wins and 135 points. Best season by a team in NHL history. What happened is they got a 3-1 lead over the Florida Panthers in the first round of the playoffs, and boom, they blow a 3-1 lead, and they're like, what happened there? This incredible season just blew up in one round. And Bruins fans weren't pleased. Bruins management wasn't pleased. Nobody was pleased. Montgomery wasn't pleased. Players weren't pleased. So it's interesting, though, because it formed a narrative right away because in the run-up to the his second season on the job, there was a narrative in Boston. It's just like, well, you know, Montgomery did a great job. It's a record-setting season. It's got a great future, but he's going to have to start winning in the playoffs. If they have another one and out, one and done, the Bruins might think about making a change. So Jim Montgomery, almost from that one series loss to Florida, which was a big upset, has been having to read and hear and listen and live with speculation that he's this close from being in trouble, this close from maybe getting a boot. So if you don't trust the situation, or you just get a feeling maybe the relationship with the general manager is kind of gone sour, and I'm told, and I have this on good authority, I'm told that a big-time Montgomery critic was Cam Neely, one of the all-time great wingers in NHL history, but he's been the Bruins team president since, I think, 2010. He wasn't a fan, and from what I understand from my friends in the media in Boston, Cam Neely wasn't shy about just kind of hanging around and off the record just taking swipes at Montgomery a lot. So Montgomery is a pretty alert dude, right? So he knows what's up. I mean, the general manager of the team didn't have faith in him for a five-year deal, which, by the way, the Blues are willing to give him. And I'm thinking from the Bruins standpoint, they're like, well, wait a minute, you know, we value yous, but 3 years is plenty. You know, we're not going to go beyond that, because they didn't want to be, you know, on the hook for a long-term agreement that would go five seasons. But the discussions never led to anything, because they reached an impasse just on how the length of the term and some of the money amount. Right. So Sweeney couldn't have been happy about that. We know that Montgomery wasn't happy about that. And we know that Montgomery is, you know, can't help but understand and, you know, hear the media narrative. Well, he's really under pressure, and he knows Cam Neely's taking shots at him. Would you want to stay in Boston unless you had more security? I'm just asking a common sense question. When something starts to go bad, do you really want to be there and continue to live this way? His job security has just been an obsession among the hockey community, media, and otherwise in Boston. So when this contract discussion, brief as it was, fell apart, it was kind of the beginning of the end. And I don't know what, you know, Montgomery was offered, but it wasn't good enough. And we know Sweeney wasn't going to move from what he was offering. So it was the beginning of the end, and the job security was an obsession in Boston, as I mentioned. And every time he would have a setback, he'd lose in the playoffs, it would start all over again. Oh, they need to fire Montgomery, he can't win in the postseason. So if you're wondering, well, 3 years is a pretty good deal, right? And I understand why Jim would feel perhaps people are working against him behind the scenes, or that his relationship with the guy who hired him is not going well. But 3 years is 3 years. And most coaches or managers I've ever dealt with, hey, when they offer your contract extension, you take it, you know, because that's whatever happens, you're going to get paid. And it also strengthens you inside the clubhouse or the locker room with the players. But let me propose this to you. If Jim Montgomery knew that whenever the Brewers, it's not baseball season yet, whenever the Bruins fired him, or when he walked away on his own after this season, the end of this season, whenever he was actually free from his contract, he had a job waiting for him in St. Louis. So he could, given that knowledge and given that security, that peace of mind, he knew he didn't have to kowtow to the Bruins. He didn't know that he knew he didn't have to take whatever the heck Don Sweeney offered him, right? He could stand his ground and demand what he wanted to stay there and put up with all this stuff, right? So if you think about it in those terms, if Jim Montgomery knew for sure, off the record, of course, not officially, if he heard it through the grapevine or through third-party sources, yeah, hey Bubba, that Blues job is yours. You know Doug Armstrong loves you, man. That whole Blues organization, the owner, Tom Stillman, they all love you. They want you to be their coach. Just know that. Okay. Well, Jim Montgomery can kind of dig in and just base it. No, not taking 3 years because he'd be free to leave after this season. I know that's no way to coach a team, but, you know, a couple of friends of mine that I've known for a while that work in the media in Boston told me that one thing about Montgomery from training camp on this season is that he was different. He seemed edgy. He seemed little more like he's always been a really positive guy, right? But he's kind of testy. He was impatient, get a little snappy. And I think he was just getting tired of the whole Boston scene. And you can judge him fairly or unfairly, or I should say you could judge him positively or negatively. You can do what you want. But he just kind of had enough of that. And the front office did some strange things in the offseason. And I'm not going to get into that. You can find that stuff and read about it. But those contract negotiations with the goaltender Swayman just carried over into training camp, and it was just a total mess. And there were some other questionable decisions. So it was things were not going well for Jim Montgomery. Didn't feel right about it. Didn't like the way they were going. He and Sweeney disagreed on some hockey things. So Jim Montgomery had a job waiting for him here in St. Louis, where he still has a home and where his wife is born and raised and where his kids have cousins and aunts and uncles to play, you know, to hang out with. You know, it's a happy place for the Montgomerys. So he had that chance to recommit to the Bruins, and he basically took a pass on it. And the team, for their part, can say, as Don Sweeney did the day after he fired him, told the media, well, you know, we offered him a contract extension. In other words, don't look at us. I don't know why. Hey, you have to ask him why he didn't want it. So the Bruins were trying to, as we would say in Polish, the Bruins, by telling the media that Montgomery turned down a contract extension, or at least an invitation to a contract extension. As my Polish grandmother would say, the Bruins were trying to cover their dupa, or dupajasz. That is Polish for backside, rear end, right? So, because that way Sweeney can say, hey, wait, you know, we wanted to keep him here. I don't know. Maybe you did. Maybe you didn't. Maybe it was best that he goes. And the situation was, he gets off to a slow start because Montgomery didn't sign a contract extension. It made it really, 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 really easy to just say, that's it, enough. And they got off to a bad start. There was a lot going on. It was pretty chaotic. Had he given him a long-term contract, even 3 years, he might have hesitated. He might have said, well, wait a minute, let's give this more time. But you know, let's face it, Sweeney in the front office, they were kind of ticked off that he didn't really enter in any kind of negotiations. It was kind of 5 years to forget about it. And so you got to believe that factored in the decision to fire him this soon, because they're like, well, he didn't commit to us. We're not committed to him. We don't owe him anything. So things sort of eroded very, very quickly, but it was building up over time. So if you're Montgomery and you got all these Vipers, including front office people, you know, just, you never know where they are, what they're going to do, when they're going to pounce again. Why would you want to stay in a snake pit when you had options, when you had one big, beautiful, wonderful option because of what's in your heart, St. Louis, Missouri, and the St. Louis Blues? It was just a matter of time. And during the season or after the season, he was going to wind up with St. Louis. So Montgomery had to know the Blues were going to hire him, as I mentioned, and I'm looking at my notes, making sure I'm forgetting anything. He would walk into the, unlike Boston, where it's like constant, you know, yapping about his job's on the line and this and that. Cam Neely taking digs at him off the record. He could walk into the Blues offices and everyone there would be thrilled to have him. Blues fans thrilled to have him. Everybody excited. The players thrilled to have him, especially the guys he worked with closely as an assistant to Craig Berube, you know, Thomas and Kyrou and Buchnevich. And there are many others, but the point is, whoever's coaching the Blues got to get those guys going, because as I mentioned in the video yesterday, their productivity has slipped this year. And the Blues just are awful offensively. And I think Montgomery's going to change that. All his team in Boston this year was really bad offensively too. But like I said, a lot of stuff going on. Montgomery definitely is someone who's into loyalty. I don't know him personally, but I know about his character. He is into loyalty. And the loyalty in his mind and heart should be mutual, right? Oh, as a coach, he knows you're going to be held accountable. But if you think about what he has, or he had waiting for him in St. Louis, it isn't just the fact that his wife and kids love this place. It's their home, and there's an extended family, which has become Monty's family. Never sold their home, kept it. And I mentioned this yesterday when Jim Montgomery agreed to come to the Blues to work for Craig Berube as an assistant. His son, who was like 14 at the time, just cried. Just broke out in tears because he was so happy to be going home. That still holds, right? As according to what Jim Montgomery said, told reporters today in New York. But it was more to it than just going home. You know, the Blues didn't have to hire Jim Montgomery. His career had collapsed as the head coach, a good head coach of the Dallas Stars, because of alcohol-related issues, and they were pretty severe because the Stars would not have fired him unless it was a really, really serious problem. And he had to deal with it, and he had to get his life back in order, and that's not easy. It's just not easy when you're gripped that much by alcohol. And so the Blues wanted to give him a chance. Yeah, it was something in it for them because he's a hell of a hockey coach. They wanted to bring him back. Craig Berube wanted him. Doug Armstrong wanted him. And he found redemption in terms of his profession in St. Louis, because the Blues not only gave him a chance when other teams were like, I don't know, is he still, you know, is he still drinking? What's going on? How do we know? You know, the Blues did all their work. They did all their homework, their diligence, their research. They knew that he was on solid ground because he made the necessary changes, but plus he stayed with it. And this is something we need to talk about. So it isn't just that the Blues gave him a chance. They believed in him. They trusted him. And they knew that if Jim Montgomery had dealt with his problem in a serious way that would lead to major life changes, it would pay off for them because they'd be getting one hell of an assistant coach. But here's the thing. While in St. Louis, keep in mind, this happened after the flame out in Dallas and when he was trying to rebuild his life and career. Jim Montgomery established a very extensive support group. Network would be a better way. I mean, he had so many people that were helping him that he could turn to if he was ever feeling weak or whatever you want to say about it. He always had the positive reinforcement and people that he could call on to just unburden himself. And you know, you talk someone down from the tree, you calm them down, you reinforce your support, your love, your loyalty, and that you're going to be there, you know, for him and with him every step of the way. He had an extensive support network in St. Louis that helped him get through the worst time of his life. So when I talk about he's a loyal guy, nobody should be any way, shape, or form surprise at all that he really wanted to be back here. And he actually probably had the control to do it just by not signing that contract extension. There was really no motivation to do so. And he knew that St. Louis was his home. He knew his heart was here and his house was here and his wife's family was here and his kids were happy. And I just think it's an interesting thing because I think, you know, when I call it a conspiracy theory, we have to note that there was never any real coaching search the traditional way. It was kind of like, well, I'm going to, you know, we want Monty. I mean, he never said that, Doug Armstrong, but that's who he wanted. And it, like, I think it was 2, maybe 3 days after the Bruins announced that Montgomery would return this season. And there was speculation that he wouldn't. But as soon as they announced it, I think it was 2 or 3 days later, the Blues announced that Drew Bannister, the interim, was going to become the full-time coach, right? Coincidence? Nah, none whatsoever. So let me dig into this a little more. Jim Montgomery is someone that knows how to work things. And that doesn't, I don't mean that as a pejorative or a slap or whatever, but listen, he's so close with Armstrong and his agent's got a good relationship with everyone here. And it's just like, listen, you can tell me there were no back channel communications. Frankly, I don't buy it. I know how these things work. And as I said earlier in the video, NHL front office people, general managers, and agents, they know everything that's going on in all 32 franchises. Hey, did you hear this? Hey, did you hear this? I heard Monty's just kind of waiting out because he thinks he'll have the St. Louis job one way or the other. There's no way you can convince me, and no disrespect to my friend Doug Armstrong, because he's going to be lip seal on any of this stuff. Listen, don't try to tell me there were no back channel discussions here, okay? And this made everything kind of fall into place rather quickly because everyone kind of knew what the terms would be as far as if this happens, then hey, you'll get a call from us. If Boston bounces you, you know where you can go. And it's really funny. We say, well, the firing was unexpected, but was it? After all the stuff I've told you and after the way Montgomery just basically, heck no, 5 years. Sweeney, no, we can't do that. 3 years. And that's it. It was over. So now that we know what we know, I think the firing was anything but unexpected. A parting in Boston seemed to be inevitable. It was just a matter of when that day would come. And I just won't accept the fact that Army was oblivious to all this. I just won't accept it. And if we buy into this conspiracy theory of mine, then the selection of Drew Bannister made more sense. Let me explain this. Because Armstrong, first of all, did not have a sweeping, I'm going to talk to a bunch of people. We're going to find the best coach possible. All the stuff they say. He never said any of that. So his true search started with Montgomery and it ended with Montgomery being retained by Boston. And then his next search started immediately when Montgomery was free. And then that quote search, even though he had a coach, lasted what, 3 minutes? So Bannister, if you think about it, was still an interim coach. Think about it. He was still an interim coach, even though the Blues gave him a 2-year contract. And by the way, there's no problem paying off the rest of his contract. But he was still a de facto interim coach. For all intents and purposes, he was interim coach because the Blues all along, depending on the timing, we're going to bring Montgomery back here to take over the Blues. And a few fans asked me why Armstrong selected Bannister. If you're not going to do a nationwide international search for a head coach and you settled for Bannister, why didn't he just promote Steve Ott? Steve Ott's a very respected and popular assistant. And you pay attention to the hockey pundits. They believe that at some point he's going to get a head coaching opportunity. So why didn't Doug Armstrong elevate Steve Ott? For example, if you're going to keep it in-house, why didn't you promote Ott and make him the head coach? There's two answers the way I see it. Number one, the Blues improved under Bannister after Armstrong replaced Berube after the players basically quit on Berube. And number two, that's one reason, because he did a good job as an interim. Number two, if Armstrong had a notion that Montgomery's status in Boston was more tenuous than we knew here on the outside, it made no sense to promote Ott and then have to fire him if Montgomery suddenly became available. See what I'm saying? Ott's got a chance to be head coach in this league. And I don't think Doug Armstrong, with the strong possibility that Montgomery was going to be here one way or the other, wanted to put Ott in a position where his head coaching career starts and then the plug is pulled like right away. It would have looked bad on his resume. It would have looked like the Blues didn't respect him. And I'm not saying, listen, Bannister and Ott are like two different animals on this. Ott's going to get his chance. And I know that Montgomery likes him a lot. Ott's going to get his chance to even grow even more as an assistant and be more prepared to become a head coach. So at least Ott was not disturbed and getting in the middle of all this hullabaloo, right? That's why I say Drew Bannister was still an interim, even though he began this season with a 2-year contract. I'm not saying it's fair. I agree that it's cold. It's kind of calculating, getting a little nasty, right? 2 minutes for cross-checking, 5-minute major, whatever you want to call it, spearing. It's tough. But hockey coaches get fired all the time. And as I've mentioned way too many times, I mean, Doug Armstrong fired Ken Hitchcock and he fired Craig Berube. So he's going to do what he has to do if he wants to get his guy in here as the coach, Jim Montgomery. And that means also sacrificing Bannister. Now, and the team is playing lousy under Bannister anyway. And I'm really just continue to be just perplexed by all these people. Injuries, as if this justifies the total collapse of every part of their game. Come on. Now, if some of you, here's the story I want to get into. Look, I'm only 26 minutes. I'm doing pretty good. I cut out some of the notes I had. I didn't want to ramble. So if some of you think I'm cuckoo, oh, Bernie, with your damn conspiracy theories, that's not how it worked. You know, the Blues were surprised when Montgomery got fired this early. They didn't know this was going to happen. Well, they knew there was like a little chance it would happen, or maybe a little more of a chance would happen. But it didn't matter because they were going to bring him in because Montgomery was going to leave the Bruins after the season on his own. So they knew one way or the other he was going to be their coach. So, but if you're still not convinced and you say, no, I just don't think teams operate this way. Well, I got a story to tell you. I got a story to tell you all. So the New York Rangers win the Stanley Cup in, June of 1994. Mike Keenan was the head coach. He had a contract with the Rangers that still had 4 years left, right? Over $1 million a year, big money in those days. And so even if Mike Keenan had any designs to go elsewhere, he was locked into a pretty long-term deal. So there was no reason to think about Mike Keenan and the Blues, right? Keenan had a job, and furthermore, he just won the damn Stanley Cup. He was like a hero of Gotham City. But he didn't get along with Neil Smith, the general manager, and it got pretty ugly, and they were clashing about it. And if you know Mike Keenan, that's his personality, man. He never met a conflict he didn't love. So let me bring myself into this. And this isn't meant to glorify myself. It's just I'm giving you one of the greatest stories in terms of just unusual big news stories I've ever had in my career. I'm a Post-Dispatch columnist. I get an email from just basically a reader, someone I knew a little bit was a reader. It said, listen, Bernie, I got something to tell you. I don't know what this means, but it's really strange. And I'll never forget it. It was a Saturday afternoon, like early Saturday afternoon. And he said, I'm on business or I'm coming home from business, whatever it was, didn't matter. So he's at the Cleveland airport, as in Cleveland, Ohio. And he said, it's just strange because I see Mike Shanahan and Jack Quinn like walking through the terminal. Mike Shanahan was the chairman of the Blues, was a good friend of mine, loved that man, God rest his soul. Jack Quinn was the guy that did, and Jack would appreciate this, he was just kind of the hatchet man, did all the dirty work for Shanahan, right? And I got along with Jack fine too. I said, are you serious? He said, yeah. Why would they be in Cleveland? And I said, I don't know, but that's interesting. If you see anything else, let me know. So I think I got an email a little short while later, and he said, Bernie, listen, man, I know you don't know me very well, and I'm not pulling your leg. I'm not playing a prank on you, okay? I swear to you. I just saw Mike Keenan walking through the terminal of Cleveland. He just got off a plane, and this dude was waiting for his own plane, so he's observing all this. Shanahan, Quinn, Then half an hour later, maybe, here comes Keenan. They're all in a hurry, right? And I said, all right, I got to make some calls here. So much later that day, or maybe it was the same. It was later that day. And, you know, Shanahan and Quinn by then, I think, were back in St. Louis. So I called Mike Shanahan up. I said, Mike, listen, I got to ask you something. You probably think I'm nuts. But I had a tip that you and Quinn were seen at the Cleveland airport. And then a little while later, they saw Mike Keenan. And I said, this sounds like way too much of a coincidence, because I don't know what the hell y'all are doing in Cleveland, right? What the hell does Cleveland have to do with the Blues or Mike Keenan? You know, I don't think you all were going to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, even though Keenan loves his rock and roll. I don't think you were going to go there, right? Mike Shanahan did something. Again, God rest his soul. Mike Shanahan did something he had never done before with me. We had a tremendous rapport. There was silence on his end of the conversation. There was a delayed silence. And I remember thinking, uh-oh. I think somebody just got caught. So Shanahan said, big guy, I'm going to have to get back to you on this one. Just a great memory. You'll have to excuse me. It's one of the reasons I love this business, especially when I was doing columns and traveling all over the place, the stories and the things I would find out about. This one was the craziest of all. So a little while later, maybe an hour or so, there's a conference call. It's Quinn and Shanahan talking to me at the same time. And basically, here was the story. Quinn said, I got to give it to you. You caught us red-handed. And this is all off the record. But yeah, we could lie to you, but we don't want to do that. You got us. And I said, well, I'm going to write it then. You just confirmed. No, you can't write that now. It'd blow the whole thing up. And I said, well, I have to. You just confirmed what would be a major, major story. Keenan coming to St. Louis to be the GM and the head coach of the Blues. It'll just destroy everything. All hell will break loose, and then New York's going to file suit and blah, blah, blah. And they said, let us call you right back. And I said, all right. So they called me back, short time, said, listen, all right, we got a deal to propose to you. If you can just sit on this till tomorrow, we'll give you the exclusive. And I said, listen, wait a minute. We all have a relationship, but I don't know that I trust this situation. Keenan's going to run his mouth. Or maybe one of you guys will inadvertently let something slip, or someone who works for the Blues will start saying, hey, you know what I heard? And then it's going to get out. I said, that's it. And then I got a dead cold exclusive right now. And that's back when those things still mattered. And I said, I'm not going to, I just can't take the risk of basically getting screwed by you guys, right? Shanahan, who I trust, he said, listen, you have our word. We're not saying anything to anybody. In fact, you are invited to dinner tomorrow night. And he mentioned an Italian restaurant in West County. You are invited to dinner 7 o'clock tomorrow night. And the only three people other than you at the table will be Jack Quinn, myself, and Mike Keenan. And you're going to have dinner with us. And then Mike Keenan will give you an interview, and you can break the story because you got the story before anybody. We actually don't think it's fair to you for us to like double cross you. So you're going to have dinner. We're going to talk about it, how it happened. You're going to sit down and talk to Keenan for 15 minutes. And then you got a pretty big story. And I said, do you swear you're going to honor this? And yep. They swore and they swore and they swore. And they did. And that's exactly how it played out. Sunday night, have dinner. We're all laughing. May have had a toast or something, but I'm on duty. I can't drink, right? Of course not. Anyway, there was a part during the dinner where I was just kind of like, is this really happening? Like, you know, 24 hours ago, 28 hours ago, I'm just minding my own business. And I got a guy tipping me off about seeing Shanahan and Quinn and Keenan together in the same area in the Cleveland airport. Is this really happening? He's leaving the Rangers where he just won the Stanley Cup. And he's coming in the Blues. And I asked Keenan, I said, well, you got a contract, Mike. I don't understand how this is going to work. You got a contract. He said, don't worry about the contract. He said, there's an escape clause in this contract. And I took his word on it from the way he explained it. It wasn't maybe quite as cut and dry as that, but there was. He claims that the Rangers violated his contract. And, you know, they had to trigger something that would put the next year of his contract into effect, and they missed the deadline. It's something along those lines. It was a technicality. And so I talked to Keenan. I kept my fingers crossed that nothing was going to get out. The Blues honored their word to me, just as I honored my word to them. Honor. Can you imagine that? And Keenan was just happy as a clam. Like, he wasn't uptight that a reporter was there. He liked it. So I wrote the story. I told my editors, I said, we got a big one. Mike Keenan bolting from the Rangers to become the general manager and the coach of the St. Louis Blues. What? How? What? When? And I told him the story that I just told you. And sure enough, in the days of websites and internet, breaking news, social media, there's not any like really big, you know, blockbuster exclusive stories. And so I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just saying it was a very unusual situation. And it actually worked out that way that I had a stone cold scoop. And readers of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch woke up on Monday morning and is a huge headline. And my byline is on it. And they awoke to the news that their new coach and general manager was Mike Keenan. Out of nowhere, right? Now, we all know it didn't work out with Keenan, but that does not change the magnitude of the story. So I'm going to wrap it up now. But as I was telling you what my conspiracy theory was, and some of you, bless you, were just thinking, Bernie, you're just getting a little squirrely here. You know, are you doing this for clicks? Are you just trying to think of something to kind of get it stirred up? No, I know how these things go. I know how these things go because I was right in the middle of one. Top secret agent man here. And so my mind thinks all the time of like, okay, is there something else going on here? I remember this Keenan thing. And so I really think that this thing was just all but set in stone, that Monty was going to be the next coach of the Blues one way or the other. As soon as those contract negotiations, which were not even negotiations, just were terminated almost immediately, that's when he became unofficially the next coach of the St. Louis Blues. And yeah, I drew from my past experience to come to that conclusion. All right. I hope you like the story. It's one of my favorites, maybe my all-time favorite newspaper story as far as St. Louis sports. Anyway, you all have a great day. Thank you very much for watching. Please subscribe. Tell your friends about it. And we'll be back later today or tomorrow for sure on The Bernie Show.